Good evening. All right, I like a hot mic. It means I don't have to talk too loud. On October 2nd, 1950, Charles Schulz began writing a comic strip centered around a bald-headed boy that would come to be known, that all would come to know and love. His name is Charlie Brown. Over the course of the years, Charlie Brown and the Peanuts gang would transition not just to be not just in comic strips, but you'd find them perhaps in books, and you'd find them in on television and in made-for-TV movies. And in 1969, one film was released entitled A Boy Named Charlie Brown. As the film opens, the audience sees the usually dejected title character moping down the street as he tends to do day in and day out. And as he walks, he picks a piece of grass out of the ground thinking, oh, this might be worth chewing on. Those of you who lived around a farm, you've chewed on grass before, and then you figured out that maybe not all grasses are worth chewing on because they don't taste too good. Well, such is the life of Charlie Brown. He finds a piece of grass that's not too good to chew on, so bleh, spits it out. And as he mopes down the street, he begins to think to himself, sometimes I get so discouraged, I can hardly stand it. The harder I try, the worse I get. Perhaps I should seek professional help. And so, seeking out everyone's favorite child psychiatrist, Lucy, Charlie Brown proceeds to her handmade stand. And he sits down on the chair and he comments, I think I need help. Everything I do turns to failure. I guess you know that I've never succeeded at anything in my life. You ever known someone who had a similar outlook on life as Charlie Brown? Looking over their lives, all they can see is failure after failure. They've never had a good break in all of their life. At least that's what they say. For others, maybe it's not so drastic as an entire lifetime of failure, but perhaps extended periods of their life. When everything they attempt seems to wind up going wrong. A string of taking and losing jobs. They're in and out of school, relationships starting and ending all too quickly. Opportunities arise for you to be able to shine as an individual, but turn out to be disasters in the end. What do you think it is about some people that keeps success just outside of arm's reach? Are they destined to fail? Is there a worldwide conspiracy to make sure they never get ahead? Well, to talk to someone having a Charlie Brown moment in life, you might think so from time to time. Or could it be that maybe there is a set of common factors that play into many of the situations in which we see an opportunity for great success slip right through our fingers? Factors that, if we could allow ourselves to recognize them at work in our lives, we might actually be able to remove them and begin to experience greater levels of success and satisfaction in life. Tonight, in the few minutes that we have, I want us to consider what some of those factors might be. And we're going to do that by looking at one of history's, to use the language of our teenagers, most epic fails. Israel's rebellion at Kadesh Barnea after the report of the 10 wicked spies. And as we examine the events of the day that would result in 40 years of wilderness wandering for these people, consider, if you would, that the things which led to the failure in Israel in this situation are quite possibly, if not probably, responses that are seen not just on a large scale with a group of people or a nation, not just in large scale scenarios, but even in the lives of some individuals. Responses to opportunity that keep success just outside of our reach. Our text tonight will come out of Numbers chapters 13 and 14, if you'd like to turn there. And if you'll give me a moment to provide a little bit of the setting, if you're a little unfamiliar with the story, the time has come for Israel to enter the land that God promised them, going all the way back to the days of Abraham. And so to prepare for the conquest ahead, the people request of Moses that he send in a group of men to spy out the land and get a feel for what they will be seeing as they enter into this conquest. Our text begins in Numbers 13, verse 25, as the spies have returned from a 40-day trip in which they went to the northernmost tip of the land and coming back down through the southernmost tip of the land that God had told them he would give them. However, when they return, the anticipation of these one-time slaves, of successfully possessing their own land is about to be thrust outside of their grasp because of the report that is brought back to them. Because 10 of the 12 spies that were sent in to spy out the land, they are overcome with fear of what they have seen in those 40 days. And their negative reaction to this great opportunity will spread like a cancer among the people. And the first thing we find is that the 10 spies were focusing on the flaw. Starting at verse 27, actually, reading through verse 29 of Numbers chapter 13. And they told him, that is Moses, "We came to the land of which you sent us. It flows with milk and honey. And this is its fruit." They had brought back a large cluster of grapes and some figs and some other pieces of fruit. "And this is its fruit. However," "however, the people who dwell in the land are strong, and the cities are fortified and very large. And besides, we saw the descendants of Anak there. The Amalekites dwell in the land of the Negeb. The Hittites, the Jebusites, and the Amorites dwell in the hill country. And the Canaanites dwell by the sea and along the Jordan." Do you know anyone who seems to be a perpetual pessimist? Do you have anyone in your life who might fall into that category? By definition, pessimism is an inclination to emphasize adverse aspects and possibilities, or to expect the worst possible outcome. Whenever an idea is brought up in the business meeting, they're always the first person to point out why it won't work. Upon hearing exciting news for a family or friend, they are the one who quickly expounds upon how this new great news in your life is just going to shatter everything in your life. Nothing's going to go right for you from here on out. They're going to tell you all the bad things that are going to happen. The interesting thing is that when you ask someone like this about their attitude, they tend to not see it as pessimism. They picture themselves as a realist. Right? But there's a major difference between the two perspectives. If you will, a realist, if he's going to be helpful and useful, can look at an opportunity, can truly see the potential of what lies ahead, and then help figure out the best realistic way to accomplish that goal. But a pessimist has no intention of seeing the potential. His gut reaction is to point out and focus on the flaw, thus discouraging any efforts to take advantage of an opportunity. This is what happened to Israel. The spies returned from searching out the land, And they said, yes, the opportunity is the great one. It is truly a land that flows with milk and honey. But we can't do it. There are too many potential downfalls for us to even consider this endeavor. For many people, this same response is their gut reaction to any great opportunity that may come their way. In one breath, they acknowledge the value of the chance. They acknowledge the greatness of the opportunity. But in the very next breath, they point out why it can never become a reality for them. And by focusing on the flaw, they keep success just out of their reach. But you know, the wall between us and success is not built with just one stone. Thus, we find that not only did the 10 spies focus on the flaw, but they were also exaggerating the situation. Staying in Numbers 13, looking at verses 30 through 33. But Caleb quieted the people before Moses, and he said, "Let us go up at once and occupy this land, for we are able to overcome it." Then the men who had gone up with him said, "We are not able to go up against the people, for they are stronger than we are." So they brought to the people a bad report of the land that they had spied out, saying, "The land through which we have gone to spy it out is a land that devours its inhabitants. And all the people that we saw in it are of great height. And there we saw the Nephilim, the sons of Anak, and the son who come from the Nephilim. And we seemed to ourselves like grasshoppers, and so we seemed to them." Smitten by their pessimism and fear, the 10 spies proceeded to bring a, quote, bad report. It was bad, perhaps not so much for its content, but for its purpose. These men sought to stir up and instill the very same fear they had, and to stir it up in the people of Israel. And they did so by exaggerating the power of the people of Canaan. They said, "This is a land that utterly consumes the people who go into it." They claimed to have seen the Nephilim, or giants, in the region. Interestingly enough, the only other reference we have to the Nephilim in the scripture comes from all the way back at Genesis chapter 6, prior to the flood. They were by this time maybe people of legend, people of lore. And yet, for the 10 spies, this was a reason why they could not conquer this land. I think sometimes we find ourselves having made an assertion or having started down a path that needs validating. Whether consciously or subconsciously, we recognize that our reaction to an opportunity may not be as legitimate of a response as we initially thought. Or maybe, as in our text, a man like Caleb steps forward and he brings a much more positive response and a much more positive reaction to the situation than we chose to bring to it, or maybe that we even want to bring to it. And so to provide that validation to our position, we exaggerate the severity of our concern. It's kind of like when you were a kid in a dark, shadowy room. As you peer out from underneath the covers, you see a creepy, shadowy hand on the wall. Or you hear the monsters rattling around in your closet. And if you were ever so bold enough to get out, or if you called mom and dad to come with you in order to get out and further investigate, you probably discovered that the sources of the shadow and the noises were quite benign. Harmless, really. Yet a state of fear oftentimes pushes us to exaggerate the perceived danger in order to substantiate our feeling. And when applied to our thought of having an opportunity for success, sometimes we may find that we have become so focused on our negative impression of the moment that the fear grows bigger and bigger in our own minds. The result is that reality is distorted, perhaps even to the point of failure. And I think a perfect example of this is seen in the report of the spies. What was it they said in the final verse? We seemed like grasshoppers in our own eyes. And thus they assumed that they seemed like grasshoppers in the eyes of the enemy. As a result, success remained just outside of their grasp because they were exaggerating the situation. But with as telling as each of these factors may be, perhaps none is as telling as the final factor that keeps success out of reach. Because it is this third factor that I believe perhaps lies at the heart of the problem, experienced both by Israel and by many of us. And that is forgetting the benefactor. I think it can be said, with very few exceptions, that opportunities come our way because someone else extends them to us. Whether it be a job opening, acceptance to a school, being selected as the representative for a group, whatever it may be, opportunities to succeed come because someone else has opened the door to us to have an opportunity, to have the chance to take advantage of that opportunity. I would also contend that the potential value of an opportunity is determined at least in part by who the benefactor is. In other words, an opportunity may be seen as good, better, or best, depending upon who it is that opened the door for you. What is his or her status? Will he give me the necessary resources to succeed at this opportunity? What is his track record with similar situations? The greater the benefactor, the better the opportunity. But what happens when, in our moments of fear and exaggerations, we forget about the one who is providing it for us? As we continue on in chapter 14, verses 1 through 4, this is Israel's response to the ten spies. Then all the congregation raised a loud cry, and the people wept that night. And all the people of Israel grumbled against Moses and Aaron. The whole congregation said to them, "What? Would that we had died in the land of Egypt. Or would that we had died in this wilderness. Why is the Lord bringing us into this land? To fall by the sword. Our wives and our little ones will become a prey. Would it not be better for us to go back to Egypt?" And they said to one another, "Let's choose another leader, and we will go back to Egypt." If you are up to speed on your daily Bible reading, hint, hint, you've read in recent weeks about the great works that God had done for this particular generation of Israel. Their eyes saw the destruction of Egypt by God's hand through the 10 plagues. Their feet walked on the dry ground in the middle of the Red Sea. Their lips tasted the water from the rock and manna from heaven. Their ears heard the blast of God's voice as he initially spoke the Ten Commandments directly to them. But when standing on the very edge of success, the very edge of the success that they had dreamed of, they forgot their benefactor. They forgot the fact that he had never let them down nor caused them to stumble. Instead, the people of Israel concentrated on their own frailties and their own imperfections, both real and perceived. And as a result, they were led by fear and not by faith. If you could question someone who is struggling to find the success they desire, I would say there's probably a pretty good chance that you would find a very similar mindset to that of Israel. Standing on the cusp of great success, they fail to consider that it is God who is working for them and through them at all times to open up doors of opportunity. They don't recognize that he has and will continue to provide for them all the tools they need to be successful. And they cease to remember all the other times in their life when God guided them to success. And like Israel, they come to expect disaster instead of expecting triumph. As a result, success consistently stays out of reach. There are going to be Charlie Brown moments in life. Moments when we feel as though everything we do results in disaster. Some of us will perceive it as a lifetime of failure, and others will see extended periods of struggle when success is just outside of our grasp. When those times come, may we have the discipline to step back and determine if the same factors that caused Israel to stumble at Kadesh Barnea are at work in our lives. May we be able to see if we are focusing on the flaw, or we are exaggerating the situation, or at worst, that we are forgetting the benefactor. And if so, may we also have the wherewithal to alter those attitudes and focus on trusting in God and God alone, so that success will no longer be outside of our reach, but rather within our grasp. Let's stand and sing.
Sweet.